Yeah, that's what it is. Free Radio Santa Cruz. Coming up next, Bathroom Spears Broadsides with special guest attorney David Beauvais from Berkeley, reporting on the Joseph Ciampi victory in Palo Alto, the van dweller who police tased after tricking him out of his van. Then at 6:30, Julia Vinograd, Poetess Supreme of Berkeley, and at 7:15, a report from the Central Valley with activist Mike Rhodes. Stay tuned. And that, of course, was Phil Free, Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, who broadcasts every... Oh, dear, can't see the schedule from where I'm at. Here's the schedule. Gosh. I thought it was... Maybe it's 7 to 8 on Tuesday evenings, or is it... Who knows when it is? Anyway, if anybody knows when Phil broadcasts, do let me know, and I will actually correct it. I haven't listened to his show much recently, but it's certainly worth a listen. You're tuned to Free Radio, as mentioned before, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. It's going to be a little hard calling in, but it looks like we got a caller already, and we'll see what's cooking here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Uncle Phil's show is on Monday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. It's called the Morning Thunder Show.
Oh, thank you, Uncle Dennis.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Appreciate that. So I'm glad someone is listening and able to fill in the blanks and correct mistakes as well as run interference in the studio if we have technical problems. That's, of course, our very own Uncle Dennis, who will be having his own show at 8:01 or possibly 7:59 tonight in about 2 hours when my show comes to an untimely end. As you know, I'm forced to leave the studio because of this elevator music that Uncle Dennis insists on. Actually, it's not elevator music at all. It's good stuff from the 60s and 70s, plus interesting informational updates of an environmental nature. Anyway, the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Voicemail number is 427-4523, in case you want to leave us a message. 24 hours a day, it's available. It's checked, I believe, by the folks at the center of the operation here who actually do such things. Thank you for doing that. If you want to donate something, if you want to ask a question, if you want to be part of Free Radio Santa Cruz in any way, you can give a call again to the voicemail message line, 427-4523. Or you can go online to the website, freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org. Or you can mail us one of those hefty checks because we still need money. Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061, California. And to catch me off air, call the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Which is also 423-4833. And in about 5 minutes, I'm expecting a call from attorney David Beauvais of Berkeley. I kind of posted something about this on Indie Bay earlier today. kind of a crammed radio show today, but that's good for me because you don't have to listen to me so much. You can actually hear other people talking about issues that I'm interested in, they've been instrumental in, and that you perhaps would like to know more about. This is a case we're going to be looking at, which I mentioned in the past, kind of in passing. I've been trying to get David on the air. David Beauvais, the attorney, will be calling in a couple of times, but he has been enmeshed in the legal case, and as an attorney, he has pointed out his responsibility to his client may conflict with his interest in publicizing the case. It certainly conflicts with my interest in having that happen. But I'm quoting now from the Palo Alto Online News, and this is what David is going to be talking about, I believe, when he calls in shortly. A judge ruled Wednesday morning that Palo Alto police officers acted illegally. This actually was, I think he's talking about, yes, it's talking about yesterday morning, that when the police officers acted illegally when they used a ruse to convince Joseph Anthony Ciampi, 41, to come out of his parked van March 15th, triggering a fight with three officers, a double taser incident, and the man's arrest for assaulting an officer. Superior Court Judge Thang Nguyen Barrett dismissed the assault charges against Ciampi because, he said, everything that followed the police ruse was illegal. One of the officers had pretended to radio for a tow truck. This particular ruse, said the judge, was unlawful and everything that follows was illegal. He cited a court decision that law officials should not, quote, trample upon constitutional rights of people, saying that the conduct of the Palo Alto officers was tainted. Boy, I've got to bring this judge to Santa Cruz. The complaint is dismissed and you, Mr. Ciampi, are discharged, Judge Barrett said. I am relieved, Ciampi said moments later outside the Palo Alto courtroom. He said he will pursue legal action against the city over what happened. I want the truth to come out, he said. Police officials could not be reached for comment on Barrett's dismissal of charges or the appropriateness of the officer's actions. Police were called by resident Ken Alsman on the morning of March 15th with a complaint that a man had for some weeks been sleeping in his van near Ramona Street and Lincoln Avenue, just south of downtown Palo Alto. A tape of the 9/11 call by Alsman was played in court early in December, in which Alsman complained because he said the man looked at his wife and made her uncomfortable. Does this sound familiar, folks? The three officers who responded to the call, Manuel Tamores, Kelly Berger, and Agent April Wagner, were unable to convince Ciampi to come out of his van to talk with him until Tamores pretended to make a radio call for a tow truck. Ciampi then burst out of his van and yelled at the officers, then went back inside and slammed the sliding door shut, Tamores and Berger testified. Notice we don't have the testimony of Ciampi or anything else, just the police testimony. Even that apparently was enough to doom this case and make us wonder why the Palo Alto DA was wasting any time on it, except, of course, to, vindicate further harassment efforts against homeless people living in their vehicles and possibly to preclude a civil lawsuit, which now looks to be coming down the pike. Tamores testified, that's my, by the way, interjection, not the Palo Alto Online Daily News. Continuing, however, with the Palo Alto's Online Daily News story, which was written by Dan, looks like Kazik, of the online staff. Wagner, police officer Wagner, then opened the door, and Berger said he grabbed Ciampi's arm and pulled him out of his van. Berger testified that he feared for his safety and the safety of his fellow officers because he thought Ciampi might have gone back inside to arm himself. Tamores testified that he thought Ciampi was a drug user and might be under the influence of drugs because he had pockmarks on his bare arms, but medical records Ciampi showed to the Weekly indicate that Ciampi had been treated for the last 6 years by the Palo Alto Veterans Affairs healthcare system for a skin condition that leaves marks on his arms. When Ciampi was pulled from his van, a melee ensued in which Tamores and Berger testified that Ciampi struck both of them and Wagner. Tamores said he used his taser on Ciampi twice to subdue him, and Ciampi was then arrested on the assault charge. Barrett said the police accused Ciampi of This is Judge Barrett, said the police accused Ciampi, the defendant, of violating a non-existent law by sleeping in his van. There is no law in Palo Alto, of course there is in Santa Cruz, against sleeping in a parked car or truck. Does that mean all the homeless go to Palo Alto, as Mike Rodkin might fear? Not as far as I know. There is a city law against not moving a parked vehicle within 72 hours, but Barrett noted that there is no evidence that the 72-hour law was in violation. A ruse was used to get him out of his car, Barrett said. Ruses are often part of police work, but there are limits to ruses used by the police, he said. And this, again, is a story in Palo Alto Online News. Assault on an officer charges dismissed in Palo Alto taser case. And we're talking, in case you want to follow this online, about the case of Joseph Ciampi, C-I-A-M-P-I. There's another story, kind of a follow-up story to that, called Taser Ruling May Launch Civil Rights Lawsuit. This is by Will Oremus, again, of the Daily News. The Daily Palo Alto News, which is a somewhat different newspaper than Palo Alto Online. Palo Alto... Well, wait a minute. We may have to pause here because I think I will have to because that is probably our call from Attorney David Beauvais. Let's see. Hello there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can pump up your sound a little. Say something.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, that's real loud. Well, you're doing fine. You don't have to. I don't think you have to shout or even raise your voice. I've been reading aloud from the Palo Alto, what's it called? The Palo Alto Online story by Dan Kazak, assault on an officer charges dismissed in Palo Alto taser case. And I was about to read a story from the Daily News, taser ruling may launch civil rights lawsuit. And here you are, civil rights attorney that you are, calling in, interrupting my reading. What do you mean by doing this?
Well, I got an email suggesting that I should call in.
Well, I suppose that's reason enough. So you are, in fact, Attorney David Beauvais?
Yes.
And you are a man who's been handling a number of homeless cases, some in Berkeley, some in Santa Cruz, and apparently your latest is in Palo Alto.
Correct.
So I know that I've been hounding you to get you to give me details of this case, and since you may have a civil rights civil lawsuit coming up, which may still want make you want to be a bit secretive or, let's say, keep your cards close to your chest, still, what do you want to tell us about this case that you think is interesting? We know, for example, what the kind of the bare outlines I've just read for the public, that Ciampi was approached by three police officers on because somebody's wife felt nervous about the way Ciampi looked at her, claiming that he'd parked in his vehicle sleeping nearby in a Palo Alto neighborhood for several weeks on and off, or, you know, at least that he lived in his vehicle there, and that there's no law in Palo Alto against sleeping, but the cops, when he wouldn't come out of the van or came out and went back in slamming the van shut, they thought he was...
Well, there's a few things, and I think I know the article you're talking about, and there's some misstatements in that article.
Go ahead. Well, correct it for us, please.
The way that it came down.
Right.
There was a... Mr. Ciampi had his van parked on the side of this man's house. Not you know, in line with the front door, but on the side of the house, there was shrubbery and a 6-foot fence that separated the sidewalk from the house. So he wasn't in a location. He was in the least obtrusive possible location in relation to that house.
And how long had he been there?
Well, he came and went. I mean, he spent some time there. He had, on this particular occasion, when the man in the house called the police, he had just been there for a short time. Not even a day, because he had gone somewhere else and then come back. The man had talked to him in the past and told him, you know, that he didn't appreciate him parking there, and could he, quote, spread the wealth, unquote.
This, of course, was the fellow named Alan somebody, or, okay, it was the husband of the woman.
Alan, yeah.
Okay.
So Altman called the police that day. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. He called the police and said, look, this guy is parked outside my house. He scares the daylights out of my wife. And she's going to be coming home. She's on vacation. And I'd like to have him gone. And I went out and talked to him at some time in the past, not that day. and got into it with him about it. He said, could you just spread the wealth and move somewhere else? And he said, you don't know what it's like, man. You know, you don't know how hard it is out here. And basically told him, you know, that, you know, he had a right to be there. So the Yampi's history is that he has been frequently had discussions with police officers about him parking in town. Palo Alto doesn't have an ordinance that prohibits it, but cops have gone up to him in the past and told him that there was such an ordinance. And that's what they did on this occasion in response to the call from the from Mr. Altman.
So the cops either intentionally or inadvertently misinformed Ciampi that there was a sleeping ban or a vehicular sleeping ban in Palo Alto, as, for instance, there is in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night.
Right. He was told that. In fact, that's, there's no dispute about the fact that he was told that because it's recorded. And the dispatcher who was talking to Mr. Altman that morning told Mr. Altman that he was that Ciampi wasn't doing anything illegal if he was sleeping in the van.
So in other words, the dispatcher told him this or the police officer told him that?
Dispatcher. So, well, you know, sir, we don't have any law against that here in Palo Alto.
So apparently the dispatcher was better informed than the police officer or officers who arrived and misinformed Ciampi about his rights.
Well, let's say, put it this way, the dispatcher got it right and the police got it wrong.
But you have
whatever reason.
The dispatch tape was played in court for the public and for the court?
Yes.
And did the dispatch tape include, you know, the statements that this guy wanted the guy gone because his wife was being, he wasn't even being made uncomfortable that day, but had in the past been made uncomfortable, or he was afraid his wife might be made uncomfortable? What was the situation?
No, he said that his wife, that the presence, Ciampi's presence makes his wife uncomfortable. Actually, the way he said it was, it scares the daylights out of her.
And did he say that there was some behavior of Ciampi's that did this, or just his appearance, his dress? Did he have a bad smell? What's the problem here?
No, you just heard everything that was in that on that dispatch.
Now, what is Ciampi's appearance? I mean, is he, you know, he doesn't have a three-piece suit? Is he, you know, does he walk around, you know, wagging his weenie at everyone? I mean, how does he look when he walks around?
Well, you wouldn't guess that he was homeless. His appearance is always neat. His clothes are clean.
How old is he? What's his racial makeup?
He's 41 years old. He's Caucasian. He has short hair.
Is he tall, or?
Oh, he's not tall. He's kind of short.
Is he?
But he's very athletic.
So he could be construed as a menace because he has big muscles?
If you just saw him walking down the street, you might, because he's kind of young looking, you might think that he's a student at Stanford.
Dude from Stanford, which is nearby in Palo Alto.
Right.
Go ahead.
There's nothing about the way he looks or his behavior. He's very polite, and there's nothing about his behavior that is obnoxious except that he gets a little testy when he gets pulled out of vans and tasered.
Now, he wasn't tasered, however, when the police officer came to the van and politely inquired as to why, what the fuck he was doing in the neighborhood, right?
The police officer knocked on the van, accused him of being violating this ordinance, told him to come out. He said, there's no such ordinance. Go away, leave me alone. He had a cardboard up on the windows of the van, making it very clear that he didn't want people peering inside or coming inside, but the police officer...
And his car was legal. His car was legally registered and legally parked?
Yes.
Go ahead.
The cops opened the door, you know, just turned the door handle and opened it, and then Ciampi very quickly closed the door. Then
this is all according to your interviews with Ciampi, the police department testimony, or a dispatch tape?
Everything I'm telling you up to this point is completely undisputed and was admitted by the officers.
Okay, and it's confirmed by Ciampi?
And confirmed by Ciampi. Well, Ciampi didn't testify. But what he had to say about any of this wasn't part of the record.
Okay.
So then Ciampi quickly closed the door, and one of the police officers pretended to call for a tow truck.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Ciampi was afraid that he was going to lose his van and all of his property that was in the van.
Right.
And so he stormed out of the van and told the officers, "You have no right to take my van." At that point, they started to accuse him of being under the influence. And they said in court that there were three different things that were going on that made them believe he was under the influence. One was he was agitated. The second was that he had what they called pot marks on his skin, which is what sometimes intravenous drug users get, you know, people that are injecting methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they get these sores on their skin. And he had a skin condition for which he was getting treated, but they didn't ask him about why his skin looked that way. They just jumped to the conclusion that he was under the influence.
Now, this was a consensual conversation up to this point, right? In other words, he had the right to say nothing to the police officers and continue going about his business, which might have, whatever he was doing inside his van.
Well, I don't think it was consensual once he got out of the van.
Because the police officers wanted to detain or arrest him, and they made that clear?
No, they never said they wanted to detain him, and they never said they wanted to arrest him. They told him that they wanted to step out of the van.
Doesn't that... Now, saying that... Doesn't that usually mean in a commanding tone that you're not free to go, or has that been, does the police officer have to actually use the words, "I'm detaining or arresting you"? I mean, in terms of your knowledge of court precedents.
Well, I think it was an illegal directive, and he could ignore that directive and not come out. But what compelled him to come out was the call for the tow truck, because he didn't know that the officers were faking that call. He thought that they were really calling for a tow truck.
Now, let me just take this brief diversion, because you and I have talked about this, and I've actually discussed it on the air as well. If an officer attempts to falsely arrest you or falsely detain you with misinformation, or just because he's whimsical about it, or he just doesn't like you, or, you know, maybe he feels there's a genuine threat, whatever reason, but there's no valid basis, there's some controversy about whether you have a right to ignore the officer and or to use appropriate force to resist that arrest. What's your understanding of that situation?
Well, you're allowed to passively resist an unlawful arrest.
What about actively resist?
You're not allowed to fight with the police to avoid arrest.
Mm-hmm. You're not compelled to obey what they say, though, if they're making an illegal arrest in terms of come out of the van, sit down here, sir. I mean, can you just walk away?
You can walk away as long as you're not being detained.
What if they say we're detaining and arresting you, but you know it's an illegal arrest? You still have the right to walk away.
Yeah, I suppose you could walk away.
And get tased as you go.
Right. You know.
In fact, something like that sort of happened to your client, Joseph Ciampi. We're talking with attorney David Beauvais, calling from Berkeley, about a case that was resolved, I guess, completely on Wednesday, the criminal case, when Judge, is it Barnett or Barrett?
Barrett.
Decided at a hearing to exclude evidence that all the evidence was going to be excluded because it was an unlawful detention/arrest, right?
Correct. And what Judge Barrett found was that when the police used this ruse of calling a tow truck, that they acted illegally and violated his right to be left alone, which he had already exercised by telling them to go away,
mm-hmm.
leave him alone.
So the next thing they did was they tasered him, or did they first say, "Please, sir, sit on the curb, please, sir, this, that, and the other"? What happened then?
Well, no, after he got out of the van and he was talking to them, he then went back into the van because he was looking for a cell phone to call the police. Call for help.
Who did he intend to call?
I believe he was calling a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, they ordered him out of the van, and they took out their lasers and pointed the lasers at him.
You mean tasers?
Tasers.
Right.
Sorry. It was like a laser point that comes out of the taser.
Yeah, that's true.
A little red dot on his chest. You can see it in the video.
Uh-huh. Interesting. And they were so they were videoing him at the same time.
Yeah, there's four different videos of this event.
Uh-huh.
So he didn't immediately get out of the van, and so they pulled him out of the van, and they pushed him up against the fence. And the video shows him turning around, and when he turns around, he gets tasered by one of the officers. And once that happens, he begins to flail his arms. And it looks from the video like he's trying to knock the taser gun out of the cop's hand.
What was the distance from which the taser was used?
About a foot. Pretty close.
Yeah, I know there's been...
One of the cops actually said that they got, you know, they felt the shock.
I know Amnesty International recently came out with a report citing a significant number of taser deaths, over the years. And some
yeah, well, I read a statistic that we're having about one death a month in the United States from the use of tasers, or that are in some way associated with tasers.
I guess we've got to compare that with the use of batons, chokeholds, and pepper spray, or not to mention lead poisoning.
There's always questions about causation in these cases, you know, because cops will say, oh, the person just had a heart attack, or they died from some other cause.
Drug problems.
The use of the taser was not related to the cause of death.
So
there's a lot of instances where tasers seem to be factoring in some way to people getting killed. It seems like they either kill you or they turn you into a maniac.
Or they have no effect whatsoever. I've heard that happening, too. Some people don't respond to tasers, actually.
Well, this Sanford responded to the taser, but it didn't knock him out. Like, you know, that's the idea of the taser, supposed to mobilize you.
Then what happened? What happened next in the situation?
Well, in the course of the next, you know, several seconds, one cop gets hit in the head, another cop gets hit in the face. Sanford is tasered again, and then he just puts his hands behind his back, and he's sitting down, and they cuff him, and they take him to first to the hospital, and then they take him to jail.
Any other witnesses to this from the police officers in Ciampi?
I called a paramedic who came to the scene to give treatment and to transport him to the hospital.
Right.
And the paramedic said, and he also noted in his report at the time, that Ciampi was not under the influence of anything.
So what about the neighbors? Did anybody come out and say, go get them, or what are you doing, you crazy cops?
There's a point on the tape where people are told to go away.
I see.
and then occasionally there's somebody who walks by or rides by on a bicycle.
Hmm.
But we don't know who any of those people are.
So I have only about a minute left or 2 minutes left before the next guest comes on, David. Perhaps we can talk more about the... I don't know. There's some discussion of a civil lawsuit coming out of this?
There will be a civil suit. I was quite disturbed by the police officer spokesman's response today, or I think it was today or last night, that the police officers didn't think they were doing anything wrong, and that just really made my blood boil, for that cops could act like this and not think they're doing anything wrong.
Are you going to be around 7:45?
I might be.
Because I would invite you to call back to discuss this further if you think we got some more to talk about. We probably do. I've got to just let Julia Vinograd have her time, and she'll be coming up shortly, you know, actually in about 1 minute if she calls in on time.
But oh, well, tell her I said hello.
I will. And if you feel like calling back, if it's convenient, feel free to do that.
I'll try to do that. I can't make any promises, but I will try to call at 7:45.
Thanks a lot, David. We've been talking with David Beauvais of Berkeley, homeless hero, at least at different times.
All right. Well, take care, Robert. Bye.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And phone lines are open if you want to have any comments on the 427-3772 line. I believe poet Julia Vinograd will be calling in on the other line. If you're interested in Julia's poetry, which I've read on the air before, she's recently published a new book, you can find some of her poetry in the newspaper, the monthly homeless newspaper, Street Spirit, which should be on the library shelves. I keep giving it to them, and they keep ignoring it and not putting it on the shelves, but hopefully that's not going to happen again, because I found a sympathetic individual who usually does put it on the library shelves. So the main branch of the library should have the December issue of Street Spirit, which does have Julia's latest book, which I think is it America is Hiding Under My Bed? I think that's the name of the book. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask her if and when she calls in. She's got some fine poetry. I actually put a selection of her poetry on, well, one of her poems on the story I wrote, kind of, that announced the show. And the poem is On the Street. I'm going to read it so you can get an idea of what you're going to be expecting from Julia in the next half hour if she calls in. I'm not here. Don't look at me. Don't scream when your children look at me. Do you think bad dreams are contagious? Do you think I'll breathe bad luck on your children? Suppose you'd spent the afternoon shining in our lover's bed, or in your lover's bed, and then brought him home to meet your parents, and they scream, "Don't touch that! You don't know where it's been!" You can't see me. I'm just a crack in your contact lens. I'm just a crack in your mirror. My hands are dirty. I've got your shadow under my fingernails. I can't wash it out. I've got the shakes. My own skin isn't speaking to me. And I'm not speaking to you. I'm not here. I have no past, no memories, no name, not allowed. So I eat your memories like garbage, all your buried broken promises and the bad dreams you forget till you see me, till you don't see me. I'm not here. That's On the Street from her latest book. And again, you can see there's a whole back page of the Street Spirit, the December Street Spirit monthly newspaper is taken up with both a review of and some of her poetry. You can check that out. You can also go online to www.thestreetspirit.org and look for the October 2005 issue. And I think actually that may be her calling in right now. Let's see what we got here. Looks like a caller, certainly. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, it's Julia Vinograd.
Hey, Julia, I just read a poem of yours, which I put online, called On the Street. You may remember it.
The one from the new book?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
So I'm actually kind of, we're doing a poem reading contest. I've already tried. Now you've got to top me at whatever you're going to read,
Well, I'll also read from my new book.
Okay. Now, your new book is called America's Hiding Under My Bed. Is that
yes.
Right? And this is a book available for $9 from you if you want to kick down some money to make it available. I we are a non-commercial station, but I think you have to, keep feeding the poet, or else the poet will just not write any more poetry. You have to get, the occasional meal, right?
Yes. You upped my price, but I'm not going to check.
Oh, well, that's what that's what it costs if you order it online.
Oh, okay.
No, I understand. You sell it for $5,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
But the people who rip off the public, Zeitgeist Press, apparently sell it for $9, so.
Yes, but people can just send me a check.
Go directly to, and send her $10. That'd be even better. That's my suggestion.
Okay, but if they're as broke as anybody else, they can. Actually, they have to send me $6 because I need $1 for postage.
There you go.
But I should give them my address?
Yeah, why not?
1630 University Avenue, number 34, Berkeley, California, 94703, and send it to Julia Vinograd, V as in vinegar, I-N-O-G-R-A-D.
And now, since nobody had a pencil when you said that, and they're all running to get pens and pencils, although I'm going to try to place this information online later when I do a description of the show. That could happen God knows when. These shows are archived, by the way, for those who are interested, at HuffSantaCruz.org. Give me that address again, Julia.
Julia Vinograd, 1630 University Avenue, Berkeley, California, 94703.
Cool.
Oh, and I didn't, my room number is 34.
So it's 1630 University Avenue.
Number 34.
Number 34, Berkeley, 94703. And if anybody misses that and is inspired to want to purchase one of these books, give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, which is my off-air number, and I will pass on the proper address to you, and you can do it that way.
Yeah.
Julia, what you got that you think is worth passing on to us, poetry-wise?
Can I read a batch of poems? I mean,
sure.
I'm awful. I don't have just one favorite.
You're gonna harass us to death with poetry tonight.
Absolutely.
That's the whole point, of course.
Well, I thought I'd start with the first poem and the one that the book is named after.
Okay.
It's called America. There was a knock on my door. I answered. It was America looking scared with its flags unrolling and blood clotting in its hair. Can I crash with you? Do you have a spare bed I can hide under? They're after me. How could you fit in my room, I asked. Aren't you the biggest, strongest country I heard about in high school, and who's after you? America was gasping, hands shaking, too much to light a cigarette. It kept trying and grinding the dead matches under its heel like heads. Everybody, they used to want me so much. I bathed in their eyes each morning, but now they're coming with pitchforks and torches, and the things they say. America tried to set its face into a quarter's firmness and failed. Have I been very bad? Well, yes, I told America, but I put up a junkie friend who just robbed a liquor store once. I suppose you're the same thing on a larger scale. Some rules. Only one night. If you steal anything, you can't come back, and you can't scream in the night when you get the shakes or the cops will come. America staggered into my room and collapsed in a second-hand leather armchair, which creaked but held. In 2 seconds, America was asleep, breathing through its half-open mouth, its throat thrown back, hopefully not dreaming. The terror of the world, I shook my head, looking down at America for a moment, and then I went to put some coffee up to boil.
You got to watch out who you put up in your room there, Julia.
Yeah, I know, but what can you do?
I'll read another poem. Why not?
Well, there's that. Instructions for soldiers back from war. Do not kill the waiter who shoves a hot plate of soup too close to your face. There are no grenades in the clam chowder. Do not kill the waiter. Do not kill the fat man who pushes his belly and cart ahead of you in the grocery checkout line. His friends are not about to fire on you from the trees. There are no trees in the grocery, and the fat man has no friends. Do not kill the fat man. Do not kill the smiling secretary who won't let you in to talk to your doctor. The doctor is a very busy man. She wants to be a tape recording when she grows up. She's a large boulder blocking a narrow trail in the jungle. You always smell the jungle. Do not kill the smiling secretary. Do not kill the nervous people at work who talk about the war around the water cooler as if war were a football game. They expect you to kill them if a ghost can kill, and their laughter is all wrong. You spent years doing what was expected, but do not kill the nervous people. Do not kill your family, who are not your family anymore. Somebody loved them, and you're living in his house. You know your gun better than your 3-year-old son. You always will. Close your eyes in bed with your wife. Remember the teenage whore who tried to stab you. Your hands were always your deadliest weapon. Be polite. Sit on your hands. Do not kill your family. Do not kill yourself. It is a soldier's duty to stay alive, even in the land of the dead, which seems to be all around you. There's no taste to home-cooked food, but do not eat your gun. The enemy could appear at any moment. Wait for the enemy.
That sounds like a sort of a subversive poem to me there, Julia. Haven't you got anything more patriotic that we could use to sort of uplift our spirits? After all, Obama is here. He's going to save everything with a few more troops in Afghanistan, a couple of surgical strikes in Pakistan, increasing the size of the army. Be more optimistic.
Oh, I actually enjoyed those.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
Actually, I enjoyed them too, but go ahead.
Let's see. Okay. It's called Rear End. Be kind to your behind, says a commercial, I think, for toilet paper. Don't look behind you, the horror movie's young couple are told by an old woman. Monsters, demons. But when demons come drooling, claws out, your ass deals with them. Your ass sits on shadows till fear drains out, leaving only a black outline. Second cousin to the white outlines of Hiroshima. Close your eyes and walk backwards. Your bottom reads Braille in the original language. Your ass leaves your mind behind. Your rear hears more than your ears. Dancing butts twinkle like stars. Spank the night. Shake your booty. Sometimes you have to be an ass. You have to need God or love the way you need the bathroom when you need the bathroom. When you take a dump, your ass is in charge, dragging the rest of you along like a sock puppet. And not only then. Ride your ass into Jerusalem. It knows the way.
I think we may have to consult George Carlin and the FCC on that one.
But is it more cheerful?
It's got a certain bounce and bulk to it. I got to say that.
Yeah.
How many poems are in this America is Hiding Under My Bed?
Oh, quite a lot of them. I'm picking and choosing.
Uh-huh. Have you got some that you've actually... are not even in that book, but that are coming up in your next four books?
I've got other book poems. I can certainly read you those.
No, I mean, have you got some stuff that hasn't been published that you...
Yes.
Do you want to throw a few of those at us, just in case?
Sure.
For those who... the many listeners who have purchased your books, or perhaps haven't, but we can imagine that they have.
Okay. Red wine. He's killed half a bottle of sweet red wine. Now each time he looks at his shopping cart, he sees something different. A striped tiger stalking, barely held inside his shopping cart stripes. A tiger from his own tank, it has his eyes. Or a plastic green piggy bank of the Statue of Liberty, with a slot in her head for quarters. Or a toy phone ringing, all the gone girls who never want to speak to him again want to speak to him now. Sweet red wine, sweet as their voices. Or a one-eyed teddy bear with damp fur stuffed with winning lottery tickets. Or a thick, stolen sleeping bag he felt safe in once. Or a many-layered wedding cake all over frosted flowers. His sister looked at a picture of that cake in some girl's magazine. What happened to his sister? Or palm trees on a beach. Or the warm ocean, the wine dark sea inside his shopping cart, and now the bottle's empty, wine all gone. He leans against his shopping cart, legs a little wobbly, a smile drifting off his face like a falling leaf.
Was this poem composed while you were under the influence, Julia?
No, I was just watching.
Mm-hmm. You want to hit me with another?
Okay. Let's see. Sax player and his ex-girl. There was a tongue in his mouth and a tongue in his saxophone. His ex-girl said he was always talking from both sides of his face, and her kisses couldn't compete. She was a big-breasted cigar box blonde, and he didn't smoke cigars. He had a lopsided face and looked like the sun was in his eyes even in the middle of the night. His knees bumped doorways like dogs with fire hydrants. The sax player was always nice to her when he remembered she was there, which he rarely did, even when she was standing right in front of him and yelling. He didn't hear her any more than he heard fire engines. He only listened to his music. If the sax player had yelled back, she would have stuck with him, cooked for him, and argued with club managers for his career. But there wasn't any career, just his music. She couldn't bear how happy he was, watching the shapes of his breath in the city cold, growing in his tennis shoes like a turnip. She was sure it was some kind of cosmic insult, but nobody seemed to care.
That was sax player and his ex-girl.
Yeah, it's just occasional portraits or whatnot.
Now, do you write most of these poems, like, I know I see you up at the Med, hanging out sipping coffee up there on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, or are you, you know, kind of ensconced indoors, or do you do it on the bus? What do you do?
Practically all of the above. Coffee always helps, mm-hmm. And you get ideas while you're waiting for a bus, You got ideas while you're taking a bath and you can't write. Poems like The Come and Tease You Then, or I'll write in the morning before I get up. I always carry around a notebook just in case, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean that the poems turn up. It means, it's just in case.
Do you try out your poems on friends, or do you sort of...
Oh, yeah. I phone my sister. I phone on poet friends. I go to readings and see what they sound like to people who I don't know too well. Because close friends will just fill in the gaps for me, and then you'll never know where you are.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about fans? Do you have fans who follow you around demanding your autograph? Groupies, you know. Are you constantly plagued with phone calls from, you know?
If you mean, am I a rock star? No.
But you have had things in Berkeley named after you, right?
Well, I have a special day. I got.
The city council or the mayor named a day after you?
Yeah.
And what day was that?
It was at a poetry festival, and when I became the poet laureate of Berkeley that day, and I don't.
Now wait a minute. You mean there's a new poet laureate of Berkeley every day?
No. I think it's once a year or whatnot.
This was what year was that?
A couple of years back. I don't know if they're still doing it. I know they had two. It was me and somebody.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite nice. I got a plaque.
But no stipend.
What?
No stipend, no...
No, but it was a nice plaque, and I put it... it was all full of whereases. There were 8 whereases, and I used it on the back of my next book.
It's probably actually online if people look for it. Again, we're listening to the poetry of Julia Vinograd. That's spelled V as in Victor, I, N as in Nancy, O-G-R-A-D as in David Vinograd. And I know when I Google for you, I find some of your poetry at different websites, so people can, sneak a peek at your poetry even without sending in money or, giving you anything at all to eat or any coffee money whatsoever.
Yeah, fine by me. I like people to see the poems. Money is nice, but the poetry has to get out there.
Well, you have some other new unpublished stuff, or even stuff that you, whatever you prefer. I'm trying to get the unpublished stuff because I anticipate purchasing your book, and I anticipate, that...
Reading from it on the air?
Possibly so. I myself am a great reader, as you know, and I try to read differently than you do, so I can give the particular Norse slant to the reading, but... what else? I mean, whatever you'd like to read next is fine, but I encourage you to whip out any new stuff so that we don't duplicate. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that, Although I imagine some poems bear reading at least twice, if not three times.
Let's see, new ones. Okay, The Housing Crisis.
Okay.
When Barbie and Ken go out in their little red car, I'll steal their dollhouse. I'll take their dollhouse on a full moon into the forest. Circles of sweaty, stomping drummers beat commands around the dollhouse. A voodoo priestess rides in front of the dollhouse until it grows up to her swaying, painted breasts. Then over her head, where her wild, tangled hair slaps against the dollhouse windows with rose-patterned curtains. Tree branches fall as the dollhouse roof and brick chimney poke through. The priestess chants, harsh words wrenched from her throat. Install plumbing, a toilet flushes inside the dollhouse. Her silver bracelets drip, lawn chairs, and a barbecue in the backyard with low burning coals from the voodoo fire. She puts one of the chickens whose neck she bit through on the grill. I smell it cooking. I take a knife from the priestess and cut my wrist enough for blood. She writes my name in blood on the mailbox. She draws designs in blood on her heaving belly. She'll be back for her mortgage. Meanwhile, it's my house. Furnished, even jars of jam in the cellar. On the front porch, a tabby cat rolls on its back, chasing an invisible fly. I go home.
Wow. Now, is this, should I contact, local mental health authorities? Are you suicidal?
No, I was trying to get myself a house. I don't know quite how you contact the voodoo priestess. She just turned up in the poem.
So you're looking for new accommodations.
Not specifically. I've been lucky so far, but a lot of people are. It's in the air.
Well, as long as I've known you, you've lived up there on University Avenue in this room. I guess, is it rent controlled? Or?
Yeah. Like I say, I've been lucky. I used to live on Telegraph Avenue.
In the Berkeley Inn, right?
Yes, I like that better.
Before it burned down.
Yes, I like that a lot better.
Did they ever catch, convict the, wasn't there some indication that it was done by the owner?
It was arson. That was what the fire marshal said.
It was arson by the owners, or?
I'm sure they hired somebody.
Why, because you're so paranoid and you don't like owners, or because you have evidence?
Those particular owners nobody liked.
Well, that doesn't mean they were hiring arsonists. You know?
Come on, the fire was the 3 nights after the Supreme Court ratified rent control.
Huh. So
you don't really need a graph.
I see. Well, I mean, we don't have, let's put it this way, that's not evidence for court. That could well be true, though.
It's true.
But you have no inside evidence that indicates, you know, no smoking gun, no burning match, nothing of that sort.
It was professional and nobody was hurt. The city council, like I say, there was no question it was arson. The fire marshal said so, and the city council was furious.
This was in the late 80s, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was 20 years ago, and you've been commuting pretty much daily up to Telegraph Avenue to the Med to sip coffee and write?
Yeah.
And occasionally sell a book or two to a passerby?
Yeah.
And you've never been arrested by police for vending on the street without a permit?
I don't have a stand.
Oh, well, there you are.
You know, so I'm not taking valuable street space away from anybody.
And not encouraging ne'er-do-wells, ragamuffins, and so-called street people to occupy space that could be profitably used by street signs or bike racks.
No, they do that fine on their own.
Yes.
And, I write about them. I need them there so I can write about them. You want another poem?
Yep.
Street Corner Kids. They think doom is cute, almost as cute as they are. Skeleton plastic earrings, torn black leather, black lace. Street Corner Kids take the end of the world for walks on a leash like a poodle. Sing lullabies and scratch behind its ears while talking about a band they want to see. And will the doorman take their fake IDs? Skin so smooth it should be in a museum with golden ropes protecting the exhibits from fingerprints, but touching makes them shine. Necks like lighthouses to guide sailors ashore, couch surfers. The economy only belongs to people who buy them drinks, people too old to live by simply shining. They balance on cracks that break other people's backs. They walk on wine. In the winter, they skate on mirrors. The TV they don't watch yelps, "The sky is falling," and brings on experts to explain. The young street kids have been walking around broken pieces of sky in their bare feet, the same way they walk around broken beer bottles and dog poo, and they don't explain. They only shrug, a slow shrug making a shoulder muscle dance and a secret smile.
Nice. That's another unpublished poem?
Yeah.
Does this mean you have some sympathy for these street ragamuffins?
Sure. I write about them.
Well, I know that I looked at a previous critical review of yours by Duncan, who's a writer and a habitual, street habitue. He did, I guess, what was it called, the Telegraph Times or something?
Yes, I know.
For a number of issues back in the late 70s and early 80s. I guess he complains, you were telling me that his view of kind of the desperate social situation of homeless people and street people is not really your view. You see them in a somewhat more, how would you say? What light do you see the folks around you in, or is that any way to describe it?
He wants me to write more about, he likes everything to be miserable and pathetic and doomed and... people are just people. I call them as I see them.
You just don't see doom all around you?
No, there's plenty of awfulness, but it's
can be
not
boring.
Generic.
Yeah. Give me another one if you want.
Do you want completely new ones or ones from the book or what?
What would you like to do? I mean, I'm always pushing for the unpublished ones, but I'm also happy to hear whatever you think you want to read.
Well, let me see what I've got in unpublished ones.
We're listening to the poetry of Julia Vinograd of Berkeley, whose books can be obtained, just go online, look up Julia Vinograd, V-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, or give me a call at 423-4833 so you can actually buy the books from her rather than,
yeah,
you know, stuff the pockets of her publisher. Hopefully you get something from your publisher for all that.
He buys some of the books from me, but it's kind of at half rate.
Ripoff, man.
No, he's okay.
He buys your books from $2.50 and sells them for $9. Oh, boy.
The idea is to get the stuff out there.
Well, I think also just to put a little food on your table so you can have peanut butter sandwiches at least, I don't know, 3 times a week.
Did I read you the Vampire Lady in the Economy one?
I don't know. Try it.
There's a beautiful vampire lady draining numbers from the stock market. She's gotten bored with blood. She wears a cream-colored power jacket tailored in back for her delicate black bat wings, black tumbled hair, and long black stockings. She sinks ivory fangs into the flashing board. The stock market tumbles, and men moan and wail more than when she was at their throats. Her little pink tongue licks electricity. Banks become mausoleums. Tellers look in her face and have nothing left to tell their wives. Vampire lady walks through walls of poor closed houses. They're not homes anymore. The people inside aren't real people. She drinks their futures. Calendars collapse in their veins. She licks clocks like lollipops. Vampire lady goes into the nursery and watches children sleep like dumplings. She doesn't touch the children, but she rips teddy bears' throats and tears out stuffing, slices open bellies of rubber dinosaurs, and pops out Barbie's glass eyes. No safety anywhere. Beautiful vampire lady drinks fear, the fear we can't admit, staring open-eyed all night at the ceiling, feeling like broken machines. When the vampire lady licks our sweat, we feel fear flashing electric. We could read our epitaphs by our own light.
Boy, I'll have to avoid thinking about that one tonight.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's actually, it mellows it out, although some of those phrases. Give me a few more. We have about 5 minutes left in case you want to, you know, if you've got something special that you want, you've set aside you want to read, or something you want to say that may not be poetry. I know that you are a longtime resident of Berkeley. You've been an observer there. You've been a participant at People's Park. I guess there's another celebration coming up of the large park that's next to Telegraph Avenue, 4 blocks from the university, that was created by the community that the University of California and the city are always seemingly trying to develop and concretize or turn into a parking lot or something to that effect.
Oh, yeah.
Turn into sports courts, you name it. So whatever news you have from Berkeley, feel free to, you know, give us a little of that, too, if you think you have something you want to say about that.
I don't really have any news. I've got another Spare Changer poem from the book.
I don't know why you're glorifying these Spare Changers. No, that certainly is not helping our economy. People need to be... Now, anyway, go ahead with your Spare Changer poem, please.
He has an empty cup and a cup full of empty. He leans a little around the back of time, faded blue jeans, faded blue eyes. He waits for all the questions never answered. Why is the sky blue, Daddy? Why are you always so busy, Daddy? Why can't I play with other children, Daddy? If I play with them, they're not strangers anymore. He has an empty cup and a cup full of empty. His face is quiet as if he were listening to music on a Walkman, children's music. He's a human phone book. You can reach in and touch someone. His own life has been on hold so long he makes people want to hold each other, but not enough. Not the Pied Piper, just a reminder. He takes nothing from children till they throw it away. He'll go dumpster diving for all the questions children finally toss in the garbage. He has an empty cup and a cup full of empty. His, yours. He knows why you're always so busy, Daddy.
I know you had a book, Horn of Empty, right?
Yeah, that's right. I've done that idea before.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I mean, I've been categorizing your books. I think I've secured almost everything you've ever written, and now we intend to have a large, book-burning session probably down here. Actually, no, I'm hoping that, you know, we can actually get the put in some library so you can actually, people can come and read your work and observe, you know, your middle period, your late period, and your blue period.
Do you have any questions for me?
About your work? Or about...
anything.
About anything. Gosh. Well, one question that came up as I was listening, I'm wondering, do you ever have political figures, local political figures, do they ever come into your local poetry? I mean, do you ever talk about Mayor Bates or council member, you know, Chris Worthington or...
I like Chris Worthington. He was he's a very nice guy, and he tried to help me when I was having trouble, you know, getting a place.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really write about them much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you know, I wrote a poem for Mo of Mo's books when he died. You know, occasionally somebody dies, and you can't let them die. They have to. And I'll write something to keep them alive.
I know that you, I think you wrote a poem about the guy who died in jail, who was killed in jail, the homeless guy.
Yes.
And I know Carol Denny wrote some stuff about that, too, another Berkeley activist. Is it fair to call you an activist?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a journalist, but not of the, but they're not newspapers. I write down, you know, what passes the, you know, across not just the eye, but the mind's eye, whatever I'm thinking about. I don't really think about things like, for example, Bush is just not good enough to be in one of my poems. I'm sorry, I'm a snob.
I see.
It doesn't interest me.
You're just prejudiced against Republicans, aren't you?
I don't like them.
I think Reagan might have made it into one of your poems.
No.
Right? No, never did.
No, he didn't. There were a couple of things about him that I could almost have written about. For example, a friend of mine kept switching his majors, and he was a student at Cal, and then when finally he had enough to graduate, they made the mistake of telling him he could call it what he liked, and he insisted on calling his getting his degree in magic.
Uh-huh.
And Reagan simply had to sign it, and he signed it without noticing. So my friend put it on the back of his book, A Degree in Magic, signed by Ronald Reagan.
My goodness.
Now, that was interesting.
It sounds...
And, of course, I was around during People's Park, and Reagan was definitely enemy number one. But, you know, and I hated him, but I didn't put him in a poem somehow.
Did Alan Blanchard and James Rector make it into your poetry?
Yes, Rector.
Rector was the guy who died and Blanchard was blinded, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, the blinded sculptor.
1969 when the police attacked the community.
Yeah, because that was all stuff about the park.
Go ahead.
I didn't ever meet either of them, but, you know.
I might have seen them downtown when I used to live in Berkeley in the early 70s, maybe... I don't know if I did or not. We're listening to Julia Vinograd calling directly from Berkeley on her dime, although I'm going to try to kick you down a little phone money when I see you again.
Oh, that would be nice.
Pick up a copy of your book and, you know, have some sushi. We can do lunch.
That would be very nice. The cover of my book is my portrait by my sister, you know, complete with a soap bubble, and it's my first four-color cover ever.
People can see your portrait, of course, on the wall of what once was the Forum, but it's now I guess it's Amoeba Records or something? Or what's the name of the record shop?
Oh, you mean the mural?
Yes, there's a big mural on the wall that was actually, wasn't it painted by Ocean Newman?
Yes, Ocean Newman, his collective. Well, I posed for it, but it's my backside. They preserve my posterior for posterity.
Indeed. Well, you know, we've already heard your butt memorialized, or somebody's butt memorialized in the poem earlier today.
It was fun.
Yeah. It's Julia Vinograd we have on the phone here, and that's about it for tonight. Although at any time, Julia, you want to call in, you've got new poems you want to let us know, you don't even have to wait for an invitation, but if you let me know in advance, I can clear some time up and announce it.
And you can read anything from my book once you get a hold of it.
Okay, well, hopefully I will eventually make it up to Berkeley one of these weeks, you know. And
just let me know.
Okay, and I'll go trolling for you.
Yeah, probably not before Christmas. The place is going to be messed up with a craft fair.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind, and if I make it up, I may try to call you anyway. But
yes, okay, fine.
So, again, Julia Vinograd is the poet here. She's if you want to get a book from her and get her address, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave your phone number, and I will call you back. Rather than give the full address again, Please give me a call, and I will forward you the information, and also hopefully you will forward
Julia's. $6, the five for what it costs and the dollar for mailing.
And it's worth the money for sure. And I appreciate your spreading the wealth here, Julia.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks muchly.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. We have a caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes.
You know how long I've been waiting to call you?
This sounds like...
sounds like your advocate on the street. Huh?
Linda from the streets, yes. Well, you know, we had a poet on, and poets are more important than poor...
Yeah, but we talked about this earlier, about calling you at 6, and maybe you forgot, I don't know.
You know, I think what happened, I probably did forget, we had another caller, an attorney, and attorneys and poets always beat out street people.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize, Linda, boy.
That's all right, honey. Okay, the one I told you about with a couple of my friends that are doing that demonstration in front of the family shelter over there by this shelter, of
that's
course,
a 115,
behind HPHP.
115 Coral Street or thereabouts.
Correct. Okay. And they're supposed to have that tomorrow, weather permitting.
Now, why don't you talk about that a bit, because I frankly know virtually nothing about it. Maybe you
okay.
can... There's a protest going on for the around the Rebel Leaf Family Shelter's policies? Or?
Correct. What happened was a friend of a friend... his name is Chuck. I met him today. He's got a little daughter, and she's so cute. And he's a single dad. And the thing that's bad about that is they did what we call a urine test on him and said it came back negative, which was a bunch of you-know-what, because he's been clean and sober. He's a single dad, you know, taking care of his daughter. And so
What did they claim he had? Was it marijuana? Was it meth? Was it crack? Was it
probably didn't tell him. You know, sometimes they don't. I don't know that for sure, but from what I understand is they also are probably discriminating, and we don't know for sure, but discriminating because he's a single dad. Well, I see single moms in there all the time, so what's the difference?
Do single dads? Do we know there's a policy of excluding single dads, or they just don't seem to show up at Rebel Leaf Family Shelter? By the way,
they don't exist.
Of course not. But I'm wondering, do we know that, have we seen other instances, or do you know of other instances of single dads who don't get in, or can you say, well, if you've looked over the roster of the Rebel Leaf Family Shelter and haven't seen any single dads there? What? Tell me a little bit about that.
I don't think they did a lot of research about that, but my friend Veronica is just, she's like up in arms about it.
What's her relationship with Chuck?
Friends. They're just friends.
And she's up in arms because?
Because he got discriminated.
How
Veronica
old?
Veronica seems to think, Veronica?
No, how old is Chuck's child?
She's got to be under 2.
And what's her name?
I don't know. I just kind of talked to him for a little bit. I was scattered today, so. I just talked to him for a little bit and asked him about when they were going to do the demonstration. And he said probably tomorrow, weather permitting.
And
so,
what time is he planning to be down there?
8:00.
And will you be down there monitoring this?
I'm not sure. Because, as you can tell, I'm getting sick. But also what I wanted to tell people on the air, too, is they're having a memorial service like every year around this time.
Uh-huh.
At the shelter, the 115 Coral Street.
Right.
Inside where
it's the reading of the homeless names of the dead, right?
Exactly. There's like 29 on the list. I looked at it today. I counted.
List is getting
and
shorter.
It's Monday. Oh, God. What time does it start? Like 2 o'clock. I went to the one last year.
So Monday at 2 p.m. at the homeless shelter is the
correct
reading of
the memorial for the homeless people that we lost.
So that would
year.
Be today's the 17th. So it'd be the 18th, 19th, 20th, what the 21st, or I guess it's the 22nd. We're talking.
Yeah, I think that's Monday. Correct.
It's Monday.
Yeah, that's Monday.
Is it the 22nd?
22nd Monday. So
okay.
That's when they're going to have it.
Uh huh.
So I just wanted to spread the word about that. So people can come to that if they'd like to.
It's Mama Joy still around, the woman she's a poet. She's actually been published in the homeless newspaper Street Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Joy.
I know a different Mama Joy. She's a MMH can, so I don't know if it's the same.
Joy,
that's what they call her.
Joy McCorkle, her name is. Joy
mm-hmm.
Bright McCorkle. Mama Joy, she calls herself. She's
okay.
A chunky woman. She's in her 50s or 60s, something like that.
Okay. Just,
I understand it was your birthday yourself recently there, Linda.
dear.
How old are you now?
60.
My goodness. Well, you and I getting older and older.
And getting better.
Maybe.
Yeah, you think?
Well, you know, again, so the object of this protest, what did Chuck and his daughter want?
Well, they want to get in the shelter and be off the street. I don't know where they sleep at night. I really don't. I haven't had a chance to really talk to them about that because, you know, I just barely met the man. I kind of introduced myself like usual. That's usually what I do. I just kind of get right in there and, you know.
Now, this is the first time they've done a protest outside the shelter. They have friends are going to be there and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think
8 o'clock
you know,
in the morning is a pretty cold, dark time to do it.
I know.
Why? At
I should
this time?
Be there. I should be there tomorrow because right now I'm at the armory.
Uh huh.
So
I see.
That's
you know,
where I am right now. So.
I may actually be able to attend it, or maybe not. I may try to give you a call in the morning to see what's going on.
Yeah, do that.
Do you want to put out your number so other people can call you, or is it going to...
Sure.
What's your phone number?
They can leave messages. For some reason, I turn my phone off, and then I'll get back to them probably tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
It's 831-316-8031.
316-8031.
8031.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
All righty. So we're talking with the infamous Linda Obel. Is that
the... You said it right. How about that?
I'm working on it. I'm going to cobble
Very
you, Obel.
Very good, Robert.
Well, yeah. Well, you know,
you get an A plus for that.
You've
one.
Told me enough times. I guess again, we don't have a lot of details about this protest, but at least we know.
What's going on?
I'll be able to call you tomorrow. I'd like to see people come to a meeting of HUF or the Human Rights Organization so we can understand it more thoroughly. I mean, we did have a meeting, you know, on Wednesday. We meet every 9:30 in the morning at Sub Rosa Cafe for those who are interested up right kind of near the Saturn at Laurel and Pacific on
I have a friend that's going to down there tonight to do the open mic. Her name is Becca, and she is awesome.
Well, hopefully she'll announce the protest. Maybe she'll get some support from the Anarchist Cafe. Also, on Saturday, there's a meeting of the Human Rights Organization at the Taqueria Vallarta at
across from Kansas?
Yes, Cathcart and Pacific.
Okay.
And so maybe Chuck or you or somebody could show up because, you know, it's really good to talk to people and let them know what's happening and a few days in advance. I mean, some people may be willing to show up just sort of out of the blue in the freezing cold tomorrow, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have enough
What kind of meeting is that? Well, like I said, weather permitting. What kind of meeting is that again?
The Human Rights Organization?
Yes.
Yeah, it's similar to HUF. They're concerned with the criminalization of poor people. It's Bernard Klitzer and Bob Patton are some of the main organizers.
Well, you know, I'll be Rick downtown tomorrow, so I'll probably pass the word around to people.
That's great.
What time is it? What time is it on Saturday again?
2 o'clock on Saturday, Taqueria Vallarta.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let my friends on the street know.
Hey, well, thank you, Linda.
No problem, hon. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open briefly, although I think we're expecting a call shortly from Mike Rhodes of Fresno, who has been meandering about at going to nearby Madera to help organize folks who are trying to stand up to police harassment in their community. Madera, I guess, is a relatively small town in the Central Valley. I think it's a small town. I'm not sure exactly how small it is. I'm going to try to pull up a little tape on that because I did get an interview last night with Al Williams and Mike Rhodes, who are in Madera, but I think may have to wait for Sunday to put that one on, although, boy, I've got such a backlog of stuff here, I don't know what to say. You're tuned to Free Radio, for those of you who are wondering what this is all about. Free Radio is a pirate radio station in Santa Cruz. We're at 101.1 FM. We're also streaming at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and if you want to catch me off air to ask questions, volunteer, or do anything of the sort, you can at 423-4833. Sounds like we have a call, and I think this is Mike Rhodes calling in. Let's see. Hi there, you're on Free Radio, and you're under arrest.
Hey, Robert, you got me.
Well, at least we have you, but unfortunately we can't hold you, but we can certainly try to talk to you. But I should advise you that you don't have to talk to a police officer unless you want to. You can always tell them, have a nice day, and move on.
Well, that always works for me. that I think if you're homeless in Madera and you say that, they just knock you on the head and drag you to jail.
Oh, for heaven's sake. You mean you actually are documenting instances of violence in Madera, California?
People tell, you know, telling some interesting stories up there. Madera is just a small town about 20 miles north of Fresno.
How small?
How small? You know, I don't know exactly. I'm going to guess it's, you know, 30,000 people or something.
How about half the size of Santa Cruz, sounds like?
Yeah. Largely Latino. And they had a city council meeting there last night, which a group of us from Fresno went up to observe and lend our support. I was really impressed. I mean, they're telling me there that there's maybe 300 or so homeless people in Madera. The homeless people that I talked to said that was their best estimate. And probably 60 or 70 of them were at City Hall last night. That's a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, for sure. We haven't had that kind of a turnout in many a moon. According to the City of Madera website, they have 55,000 people as of July 2006.
Well, see, you know more about it than I do.
According to the Internet. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that sounds like that's probably right to me. Fresno has about 500,000. And so, you know, if we were to have an equivalent number of percentage of homeless people from Fresno go down to City Hall at any one given time, there would be, 5,000 of them showing up. It was pretty impressive.
Fresno has 500,000 people?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that's you would have 10 times as many, not 100 times as many. It's Madera is 55,000. So I'm just getting your math straight here, Rhodes.
Math was never my strong suit.
But there was a lot of people, and I know that I interviewed a few of them last night. I have not yet set up the tape to, you know, to cover what I said. And mostly what I got was people just simply saying, we want the police to lay off. You know, we haven't done this much before. And then when I heard you tried to take a tape recorder or you tried to take your cell phone into city council and, you know, broadcast live over to my tape recorder, and unfortunately it was just too hard to hear. But you were there. You were an eye or an ear witness as well to what happened. So you had 60 people outside who were, and there was something on the agenda about police abuse from the California Rural Legal Assistance Group?
Right. Baldwin Moy is an attorney with the California Rural Legal Assistance, and he spoke. What they were trying to do is to get the city council to pass a moratorium for harassment of the homeless, which, of course, the Madera City Council didn't believe any of that was happening, so how could they stop something that wasn't happening?
They look like a pretty ominous group of five people, well-fed, complacent, conservative. I mean, again, I'm fantasizing based on the pictures I saw on their website. I'm probably, I mean, I apologize to the council members if they're actually deeply compassionate and, you know, champing at the bit to be helpful in stopping any misconduct that's happening, so.
Well, I don't think that your reluctance is misplaced, because the city council ended up not doing anything except acknowledging that people had come and spoken to them. They might start a task force to look at homelessness in the community. The city attorney said that if any abuse is taking place, that he wished that people would come to him and talk to him about it, because they would be very concerned if that was happening.
Well, that's the next spot 60 people should be sleeping in, is in the city attorney's office, I would say.
There, apparently, people in Madera that are homeless don't have an easy go of it. There is a rescue mission, which has, I believe, about 60 beds there, and people, you know, use that facility, and they put some extra costs down, too, so you might get 100 people in there, but with 300 people on the streets, everybody else is out in the cold, as it were, and it is cold here these days, too, getting into the 20s.
I think we're in the 30s or 40s here in Santa Cruz, and we have the thrill of 100 to 200, well, about 160, 70 to 200 beds is a little strong. Cots, mats, mm-hmm. what you will, and 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people here, who many of whom I indeed would prefer to shelter themselves rather than, you know, get essentially institutionalized for 12 hours and miss work if they have work, and you know, not be allowed to have their pets. And I think there's, not sure what the story is in terms of sleeping with couples. I'm not sure what
well,
that is.
I found out in Madeira that in order to get into the rescue mission to get a bed, you have to take a breathalyzer test. So if you had a beer to drink, you cannot have a place to sleep.
Well, we know that only people in houses are allowed to drink beer. People at homeless are not really are not old enough. You know, they're not mature enough. They haven't learned to hold their liquor.
And another thing that came up last night was somebody on the council said, oh, but we have these warming centers that people can go to. And then somebody else reminded them that they close them at 8 p.m. in the evening. So it doesn't really help people who have to spend the night out for them to have these what they call warming centers. I think it's like at a community center or something.
Well, there is a budget crisis, Mike. I mean, you have to understand the position of the city.
I appreciate your chirping in for them. That's kind of you.
Yeah.
But the people that don't have housing in Madeira don't have the opportunity even to put a tent up or any kind of a shelter, because it would be they would be immediately targeted by the police, at least that according to the homeless people that I spoke to. They said that they're forced to sleep in trees. They sleep in abandoned buildings when they can find them. It sounds like a very harsh environment for one to be homeless in.
This is your first field trip to Madeira to be a witness to and to support the homeless protests there?
Yeah, actually it is. I've been to Madeira many times before, but this was the first time that I've gone up there to talk to the homeless people. And the first time earlier this week was the first time. Monday morning we went up and we started talking to folks outside of a breakfast hall where the Catholic Church serves meals. And we were immediately surrounded by about 60 or 70 homeless people that wanted to tell their stories, and we were there to listen and to encourage them to attend the city council meeting, which was last night.
And did the 60 to 70 people get a chance to tell their stories at the city council meeting last night?
Maybe 5 or 10 of them did. There was some presentations that I thought were very good. They were able to tell the city council basically what they wanted, which was one, that they wanted the police to stop harassing them, and two, they wanted more beds, more shelter space. They were suggesting opening an armory. I think there's a National Guard armory in Madeira, and they simply wanted more space to sleep in, and they wanted to stop being stopped for trivial citations, which just, you know, lead to problems with the courts and spending time in jail. And, you know, had one guy tell me that the police had rousted him out of his truck that he was sleeping in, told him that they thought he was under the influence, and arrested him and towed his car away. And I had to ask him how they thought that was going to help him. And he couldn't think of any way at all that the police's actions helped him. He said he wasn't under the influence. He was just sleeping in his truck peacefully, and now he has to pay $200 to get his truck out, and he's stuck on the street.
Is it illegal to sleep in your truck in Madeira?
Apparently, it's it's a problem for him. I don't know what ordinance they have, but that reminds me that they do have a camping ordinance there, which is...
Which you don't have in Fresno, right?
Which we don't have in Fresno. They couldn't get it passed in the city council here, but they did pass something in Madera.
Well, they should contact Mayor Matthews or Vice Mayor Rutkin, who have successfully defended the camping ordinance in Santa Cruz against all comers, and also actually a sleeping ban as well as a camping ban in Santa Cruz. So maybe the Fresno politicians need to turn to our liberal progressives in Santa Cruz for some advice.
Well, they may do that. I'm sure they're ever vigilant to figure out new ways of eliminating the homeless from Fresno. But I think they just have it wrong. I think they think that their job is to eliminate the homeless, not help the homeless. And I fully expect them to come up with some new draconian law that will make it a crime to give a homeless person a meal.
You're talking about Fresno or Madera?
I'm talking about Fresno, but I think Madera, in some ways, is even worse.
Well, we should let people know who don't know your history that you are a key figure whose photography, along with that of your daughter and that of other homeless activists on the street, like Pam Kincaid and Al Williams, and put together a series of documents that talked hard-headed attorneys into coming to Fresno and successfully pressing a $2.3 million lawsuit that resulted in a settlement about 6 months ago, some of which has actually reached the pockets of homeless people. And it wasn't that they overturned the sleeping ban in Fresno, but you may have actually functionally overturned it to some extent by blocking the Fresno camping ordinance and by seeing the continuation of homeless tent cities like New Jack City and The Hill. And I guess you mentioned a third one that had recently arisen, mostly with Hispanic people, in the last time we talked in Fresno. So your documentation, which can be found on indybay.org/centralvalley, indybay.org/centralvalley, all small letters, all one word. And again, we're talking with Mike Rhodes. You can also Google for Mike Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S, Fresno, and you should be able to find lots of interesting, well-documented stories and some videos as well as some audio tapes, right?
Yeah, I'm starting to put more video up. I did some interviews just last night with homeless people in Madera, and they were telling me the same types of stories that I heard in Fresno before our lawsuit. They were talking about how the police would come and take their property, and you know, they had no way to get it back, which was the essence of the lawsuit that we filed against the city of Fresno, that their procedures, their policies of taking and immediately destroying homeless people's property was unconstitutional. And as far as I can tell, from the conversations I've had with people in Madera, the exact same thing is going on up there. And when it was brought up at the city council meeting there last night, they absolutely refuse to believe that anything like that would happen. Now, I think the next step that we have to take there is to have somebody carrying around a video camera with them and catch the police as they're taking people's property.
I spoke with Vernon Price of Madera. He pointed out that not only are they, I don't know if he went into the property seizures, he may have mentioned it, but he mentioned that 14.02 municipal code makes it illegal to camp anywhere in Madera, and of course in a town which has space for only, maybe 100 people out of, you say, 300 homeless people, and that's perennially inadequate shelter, which was the standard used by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the Jones and Spencer settlements, Jones settlement in Los Angeles, Spencer settlement in San Diego, which found that if you can't house homeless people or give them an emergency shelter, you cannot criminalize them for sleeping at night. In fact, in San Diego, it's broader. San Diego can sleep any time of the day or night. It's just that if they're sleeping during the day, they have to be offered a shelter space, they have to refuse it before they can be ticketed. But the rest of the time, they don't have to be offered anything because it's acknowledged that there is no shelter space generally for the overwhelming majority of people in Los Angeles and San Diego. But in Santa Cruz, I have to tell our local Santa Cruz audience, we followed a much more enlightened policy, which is you get ticketed or told to move along because we have a sleeping ban and a camping ordinance, which covers 90% of the homeless people outside. Which is an interjection in the middle of what you're saying, but I just had to say it because I felt like it.
And you're the host.
I'm the host, man. I run
things. You have the microphone.
I'm talking with Mike Rhodes of the Community Alliance in Fresno. So they're gonna. Are you going to, you know, donate video cameras, or is Vernon going to run around with video cameras in Madeira and document what happened there, the seizure of property, the people being woken up at midnight and told to move on even though they have no place to go? What's going to happen?
Well, we don't know yet, Robert. We're still looking at what our options are. I'm working with the ACLU here, who's taken an interest in the case. In fact, that's who I got a ride with up there, was the president of the local ACLU chapter. And so I'm hopeful that they'll be interested in this. I think that we need to get some of the people who have been...
Is there a Madeira ACLU? We're talking about the Fresno ACLU.
The Fresno ACLU.
Right. Well, you know, again, we have a problem because our ACLU couldn't give a rat's ass about the sleeping ban. And maybe you could send some of your ACLUites over there to, you know, to slap these guys around. It would be very, very much appreciated. But go ahead.
I have no idea how things have turned out the way they have in Santa Cruz. It just seems bizarre to me that... You wouldn't have a working relationship with a group that is allegedly supports people's civil liberties.
Civil liberties, you know, in Kazakhstan, political co-option in Santa Cruz seems to be the motto for us.
One of the things that sort of perked their attention up in Madeira when we were there yesterday and on Monday was that we're also hearing stories that the police stop people and then search through their property. And they do this without any probable cause. They just stop a homeless person and they search through their belongings looking for God knows what and run them through their system to see if they have any outstanding warrants.
Well, it sounds like the Santa Cruz police on Pacific Avenue.
Well, see, that seems like a very basic civil liberties concern, that people are being harassed and being searched without probable cause. I don't know why the ACLU wouldn't be interested in that.
Well, you know, why bother with the poor people? There are just too damn many of them.
And there's more every day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the surplus population is a real problem. We have enough problem, you know, guaranteeing... you know, the right to, engage in certain, you know, in free speech activities at public bodies for middle-class people or to, you know, but in any case, I mean, obviously, I'm being sarcastic. What kind of definition of harassment, I guess you just gave it to me, searching and contacting people without probable cause? I think we have a caller who's going to try to call in and ask you a question. Are you up for that?
Sure.
Let's see if we can actually get this person on the line. Hi, I think you're on line with Mike and Robert. Are you there, caller?
Yeah. Hey, Robert. I actually had a question for you.
Uh-huh.
You say the ACLU doesn't give a rat's ass about the sleeping ban.
Correct.
In
Santa
Cruz.
They
care about civil rights or human rights or something for people in Kazakhstan, but not here in Santa Cruz.
Right, or they care about different kind for gays. They care about gay middle-class people. They're concerned about defeating Proposition 8, as we all are, I think.
Right. So my question is, what efforts have you made to make contact with the local ACLU?
Sure. Well, most recently, actually, the Human Rights Organization has addressed a letter to the president, Patrick O'Reilly of the ACLU, and asked him to meet. And Riley said yes, but not, you know, he's a bit busy over the holidays. So while the homeless freeze, that meeting could be postponed. I've actually gone to several ACLU general meetings. The last time I went to one, actually Bernard Klitzner stood with a sign while they awarded the Hammer of Justice Award to Mayor Ryan Coonerty, a big supporter of the sleeping ban.
What was he given an award for?
It was called the Hammer of Justice.
Yeah, but why was he given?
Because Sheila Coonerty, his sister, apparently spoke well of his educational activities up on the University of California, where he gives courses in constitutional law.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like reading a Mad Magazine parody. The year before, as you may know, caller, I went to the ACLU general meeting with the sign and the sleeping ban, and Mike Rotkin, who was on the board of directors, tried to have me arrested for carrying in the sign.
At an ACLU meeting?
At the general meeting of the ACLU in August of 2007, and I attempted to, you know, the police, when they arrived, looked at me and the sign and told Rotkin, we can't arrest him, it's an open public meeting, you know, he's doing nothing wrong. So they had to let me in. But it gives you some idea of the strange nature of the priorities of the local ACLU.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Rock, and if you talk to David Sweet, who's been on the ACLU for 5 years, he said they have discussed the sleeping ban at great length in private committees, but they just can't quite figure out whether it's a civil rights violation or a human rights violation. And, you know, they can't find out legally, you know, quite how to attack it. Now, the ACLU in L.A. knew how to attack it because they won in the Jones case in 2006 in April, they claimed it was cruel and unusual punishment, and the federal court agreed with them, but not our local ACLU.
Well, thanks for answering my question, Robert.
No problem.
Take care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's a strange situation, Mike. As I said, we need some. You need to send some fresh blood over, some real feisty ACLUsters.
Right. Well, I don't know. Apparently, you know, the situation here in Fresno is just, you know, 300.
Well, you had a big victory, you know. You had a big victory that lost. Let me take this call, and maybe there's a question for you. Hi there, caller. You're on the air with Mike Rhodes and Robert. That's me.
Hi, Robert. It's Madison.
Hey, Madison.
How are you?
Got a question for Mike?
Hi, Mr. Rhodes. I'd like to hear what's going on with the ACLU in Fresno, and I know here in Santa Cruz that a number of us have been tortured in the jail at length for hours on end. And they made calls to ACLU, and Rotkin and these people blocked the calls, and we were discriminated against by the ACLU. Get that. And no one got calls back. So can you do a show on them and the lack of service?
Anytime that you've got, you know, the documentation, Madison, I'm happy to present it.
Well, you can interview me. I was tortured in the jail for over 8 hours.
Okay. Well, we can
talk. A number of people have been, and I know Rotkin blocked our complaint.
And
okay?
I mean, but remember, this is an important topic. And again, what we have, though,
no
is
no reason.
Yeah, we have
okay.
as thank you.
No, I want the ACLU. You know what I call it? Yeah. Agents for Community Laundering.
Yeah, it could well be.
Unit. Yeah, bye.
Thanks. And again, we're talking with Mike Rhodes on homeless topics. So, and actually, it's topics about Madera and Fresno homeless, though I am trying to get a shot or two in at the local scene because okay. I think it's important. But harassment, I mean, I've tried to define, I'm doing cop watches on the street more recently, kind of setting up a table and a video camera and encouraging people to where the police are usually telling people can't sit here, can't sit there, move along, you have to move every hour, blah, 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 can't perform here, can't sing after sunset, and then try to document and expose these kinds of police activities, some of which are legal because of the laws that the city council has passed. But when you went to the Madera City Council meeting last night, did you have a sort of a specific set of concerns about particular police practices that you or that, let's say, you know, the Madera local activists felt had to be stopped and were particularly, you know, abusive?
Well, they addressed the issues of police stops and searches and how they, you know, if you're homeless and you are walking down the street in Madera, you can be stopped several times by different officers and, you know, searched, patted down, have your name and ID run through their system, cited for minor infractions.
Or at least these are the accounts that you got from Madera homeless people who had experienced this.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, you know, the problem is, Robert, I think part of the problem is that the city council of Madera, the people who are on the city council, live in another world. They didn't hear it. I don't think they were in denial about that this would happen in their city, that they have complete confidence in the police, that they would never do anything unprofessional. And so it was the start of a dialogue between the homeless and the city council. I don't think whatever has been done to this point has moved the city council to make any changes. But if they're pushed on this, I think that changes could come. They, you know, to have 60 or so people come to the city council meeting to address this issue has got to make an impression.
And does that happen in Fresno, too? Have you had a large turnout going to your Fresno city council recently?
Absolutely not. And no, you get a couple people down there, and that's good. We did get large numbers of people coming to the hearings during the
federal lawsuit.
Yeah, when we had it in federal court. So, you know, there was a lot of interest in that.
Does that mean Fresno has less abuse generally than Madera, or the people are less, you know, emboldened or more intimidated or more, what does that mean, more complacent? I mean, you have some pretty active forces happening in Fresno, but you don't have people coming to city councils because they've already done that and they're kind of waiting for the results of the lawsuit dispersal?
I think that organizing in the homeless community is challenging. And at least here in Fresno, we haven't found the right combination of how to mobilize large numbers of people. Perhaps in Madera, they know something we don't know.
You're also planning to go, I understand, to Merced and look there for what's happening with the Merced homeless, right?
Merced's a little bigger city, not as big as Fresno, but bigger than Madera, and they've been in the news lately, too. And I don't have all the details about the situation in Merced, but what I can tell you is that the police and social service agencies are going out to homeless encampments, and apparently there they do have some concentrations of homeless people down by the river. There's a river that runs through Merced, and they're being told that they have to move on. They're not being told where to move on to, but just that the time has come for them to move on. Mm-hmm. And so they've gone to the city council. They, too, were meeting on Monday this week at the city council to talk about this. And my contact there, Sal Sandoval, and I haven't talked yet, although he said that there was a story about this in the Merced, I think it would be the Sun Star, that came out on Tuesday. So if you have access to that, you can probably get more information than I have.
You know, I may check that, Mike. I wanted to also ask you, because I'm running short on time here.
Okay.
You recently wrote an article, New Recycling Laws Will Impact the Homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you have this fine quote from Anatole France, "The law in its majestic equality forbids the rich and the poor alike to sleep under bridges, to beg in the streets, and to steal their bread." You state that starting December 1st of this year, earlier this month, fewer homeless will be able to recycle cans and bottles as a source of income because now it's going to require a valid driver's license, state ID. 5 new bills passed have limited this, now require vehicle license number and state of issue, description of the items being recycled, statement that the seller is the owner, or a signed transfer document, photograph or video of the customer for non-ferrous recycled materials, and a thumbprint of the customer. Is this actually being used in Fresno to stop recyclers who are homeless?
Well, you know, I haven't heard that much about it since it's been implemented. I heard about it in weeks before. People were complaining that this was going to be a big problem, but since then, honestly, I haven't heard back from people. People haven't been complaining. Either they got IDs or the recyclers aren't vigilantly following the law. I don't know what the case is. You know, this did pass through Sacramento and was implemented on December 1st. From what I can tell, the intention of it was not necessarily targeted specifically at homeless people, although that's what it's going to affect more than anybody else. But there's so much going on with copper being stripped out of both homes and lamp poles and anything else. I guess sprinkler heads in the agricultural area around here. And so that is what they said, that that law was passed to address. But I really haven't heard from anybody that I know that's recycling.
I've gotten complaints about local tickets. We have a really nasty public works department that not only, I don't know, encourages the police, I guess, to go after recyclers, people who just, you know, even those who are have the permission of those, of other people to take their cans, once the trash cans or recycle cans appear on the sidewalk, the city suddenly claims them as, you know, their property. And you get these stories. That we have a local publication published by the Public Works Department, which, you know, suggests that people who are homeless recyclers are, you know, sinister and dangerous and, you know, report suspicious activity to your local police and yada, yada, yada. It's kind of disheartening and kind of spooky. We're talking with Mike Rhodes of Fresno, who's just returned from Madera. His stuff can be found online on indiebay.org/Central Valley. If you want, you can finish up. I also commend to your attention, I sent it to you, there's a Sacramento Bee story that you may have seen about, mediation going on in Sacramento with attorney Mark Maron, who has filed a lawsuit against the Sacramento sleeping ban, and he said he's been in touch with you.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities between the Sacramento case and the Fresno case. He's been in consulting with the attorneys that worked on the Fresno case to get documentation and legal backup for what he's doing.
And I'm hoping to, I'll try to give a longer account of that, but I'm going to leave you now. I'll give you the last word if you want to sum anything up that we haven't talked about that you think should be mentioned.
Sure. One last thought, and maybe we can talk about this at another time, is that, you know, we were talking the other day. We were having a meeting of homeless advocates, and the conversation led to all of the foreclosed homes and the abandoned buildings and homes in Fresno. And there are literally one or two abandoned houses on every block here. And so we were thinking about how many homes and apartments are unfilled and how many people are unhoused. And it seems like it would probably be a pretty close match. And so the question is, why can't this society meet people's needs?
Or why can't people who are outside take over the houses and the community members around them support the takeovers, as has happened, for example, in San Francisco in the 90s with Homes Not Jails, or in the 30s when, you know, people were evicted from buildings, the Communist Party would, local Communist parties and other socialists would take the people's stuff and put it back in the building and say, you know, to hell with the sheriff, back off.
Right.
I mean, we're going to be finding more and more, I think, conditions like that as the, you know, the Obamatons come into power.
Well, you know, if the society can't resolve this by, you know, people getting housing that need it, and there's just all these houses that are just going unused, then people will have to take it into their own hands to do it.
I would start organizing, you know, today rather than tomorrow around that issue. It's already been done in some cities, and, you know, I mean, of course, there are whole organized sets of squatters in the Lower East Side, or there were in New York City, of course, different circumstances than Fresno, certainly. But, you know, you got a harsh winter there, and, you know, I don't think the, what do you call it, the dog houses or the tool sheds that the city has set aside for a fraction of the homeless people at the Poverello house are going to be enough for you.
I agree. Okay, we'll start organizing.
Go for it. You're already doing it. I wish we could do as well as you, Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right.
That was Mike Rhodes of Fresno. Again, go to indiebay.org/Central Valley to check out his stories, or just Google for Mike, R-H-O-D-E-S, Mike Rhodes of Fresno, and you'll be able to, you know, read some really not just interesting stories, but you'll see photos, videos, hear audio. He covers it very well. And it's quicker than listening to all this stuff on the radio. But you are tuned to the radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Name of the show you're listening to is Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. My name is Robert Norse, and I appreciate the call-ins. I've talked a lot about the local ACLU. A lot of good people with a lot of good intentions, but for some reason, unlike other cities, it's, you know, it's a hot political potato, and therefore they keep avoiding it. That's my only explanation for what they're doing and why they can't just issue a statement. We haven't got the legal power to do a lawsuit, but we certainly oppose the sleeping ban. It'll be quite simple, but you know, with people like Sheila Coonerty and Mike Rotkin on this on the board of directors. I don't actually know what Sheila's position is on the sleeping ban, but if she supports an award for her nephew, Ryan Coonerty, who was the mayor of Santa Cruz until recently, he's still on the city council and was reelected, then, you know, it's a difficult situation, I would say, to say the least. I'm going to play a little, an interview or two from the streets. We may get a call from David Beauvais, who I suggested might want to call back, the attorney, to talk more about Palo Alto's, his successful defense of Joseph Ciampi, the homeless guy who lives in his van, who was assaulted and tasered by police when he was just trying to mind his own business and stay in his own vehicle. We have similar kinds of situations that happen here in Santa Cruz. We saw in the case of Donna Dice, who still goes to court in January, a woman who whose arm was broken by Sergeant Christian Lamas when she tried to get into her van, and he's demanded she stop and or just pulled her out of the van, allegedly as some part of marijuana investigation where she, you know, they didn't even charge her with marijuana, and they didn't even say that was what it was about, and there are real questions about whether he was properly identified. You can read about this on IndieBay/Santa Cruz. You know, it's a problem for people who live in their vehicles, and vehicles are affordable housing in Santa Cruz. I say this again and again, and I think it's true for a lot of poor people. I mean, I think the former Citizens Police Review Board and a community television broadcaster for the last decade, Mark Halfmoon, lives in a vehicle and was harassed out of the public spaces. He's been able to find a place in private, on private property, but you know, it's one shouldn't have to fear parking on a public street, even if you're, you know, in your own vehicle, unless you're violating the law. But Santa Cruz apparently doesn't feel that way, and you have sort of a vigilante mentality, which you can see if you go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel forums, which I don't necessarily advise you to do. But, for example, if you look at the editorial that Rico Thunder, or Wes Modes, who's been active for a long time in the Free School movement and the Trash Orchestra, in the defense of the Drum Circle, and actually goes to court on Christmas Eve along with Food Not Bomber Jack Rusk for essentially engaging in loud protest defending and the Drum Circle at the Farmer's Market, which, by the way, I want to point out, the fences were put up again by busybody, public assembly-hating, anti-countercultural types who are in the bureaucrats in the city, fencing off the areas traditionally used by the drummers next to the Farmer's Market. And the community took down those fences again. Over the course of the afternoon, drummers came, set up, and played music again. Now, whether this is going to happen again next week and the week after is an interesting question, because the Farmer's Market, as I understand it, is going on vacation. And I think one of the reasons that people have been able to successfully fight and resist and ignore former Mayor Coonerty's anti-homeless, anti-public assembly, unconstitutional parking lot panic law, as I call it, the law that makes it illegal to have a public assembly in a parking lot even if you're not violating any laws, unless you get the appropriate permits, of course, you know, permits. The reason people have been able to violate this or to continue with traditional drumming activity and socializing activity in the parking lot next to the Farmer's Market is because the Farmer's Market is there. There are a lot of people coming and going, and although the police like to claim farmers are complaining, customers are complaining, drugs, feces, needles, drug deals, blocking traffic, all this essentially undocumented nonsense from Sergeant Harms, who should know better. I mean, you can find, I'm sure, individual instances of any of this stuff, as you can find it anywhere in the city, but to claim it's actually any more prevalent there than anywhere else has, you know, simply not been shown. And when I look for public records, I don't get them from Mayor Coonerty, and they're really hard to obtain from the police department, too, because when I walk in with a tape recorder to document what goes on, They won't serve me. They won't give me the public records, even though that's their responsibility to do so. And I'm hoping to, as I've talked about endlessly on this show, to have an expedition in there, and I will. At some point, I'm just not sure when we're going to, you know, invade the police station with video cameras and audio cameras and say, it's okay, it's time to stop playing around and just give us the records we need. Anyway, Farmer's Market will be happening in the next 2 weeks, won't be happening in the next 2 weeks, and I don't know what's going to happen with the drum circle, because without protective cover of the Farmer's Market, where there's a community nearby who the police department has to worry about enraging by showing up, you know, in riot gear or with tear gas guns, as they did on September 17th, we'll have to see if, you know, the musicians and the public continue to be able to use that public space, even though the farmer's market isn't there. And in fact, this time last year is about the time the police started to move in and harass and disperse a public assembly without any, you know, legitimate reason. Just as you heard earlier today, police attacked Joseph Ciampi in Palo Alto. Just as you heard Mike Rhodes today talk about police harassing people in Madera and Fresno who are homeless. It's a bad habit they have, and the only thing we can counter these bad habits with are positive steps on our part to demand the stop, to support the rights of people who are doing this, to expose it as it happens, and to report it. And if you have any reports, do give a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And, of course, I'll also remind you that tomorrow at 8 o'clock there's supposed to be a protest out at the Rebelli Family Shelter, involving their policies out there. And again, I haven't heard anything directly from Chuck and the guy who's supposedly going to be doing this protest. And if I do, I'll pass it on. We did hear from Linda Obel today talking about this, and maybe she'll be giving us a report in the future. Maybe folks can go out there and take a look. Maybe I'll be out there tomorrow, too. Here's a little from the street. I did a cop watch on Thursday with Mario and Coral downtown in front of Borders around noon. We set up a table, we had some video cameras, and we took some interviews and observed the police in action. I'll be back on Sunday, probably a little before 9:30, maybe with a flashback or two on Thomas Levitt's The Wake-Up Call, and then on my show, which runs from 9:30 to 1. We might have Anita Henry as our guest. She's a part of the Measure K committee, which had the most, probably one of the worst meetings I've ever seen in my life. But she'll be hopefully be talking about that on Sunday. Maybe she'll be coming in or calling in. Anyway, here's a little from the street. This is Thursday, December 8th. I believe that's where we're at. Let's double check. Actually, looks like the 11th, so let's see what we've got.
...of human rights, UN Declaration of Human Rights, and in honor of that, we're talking to a man who whose rights may have been compromised. Your name, sir?
Mark.
And Mark, it's about 20 to 1. We're in front of Borders on a sunny, actually unseasonably warm December day, and you say you received special notice for crossing Pacific Avenue at some point?
Yep. Down near Taco Bell, I jaywalked and a police cruiser saw me.
Actually, you didn't jaywalk. You actually crossed Pacific Avenue this side of the stoplight, right?
Yep.
Did you block any vehicles?
Not that I know of.
Were any vehicles forced to slow down or brake precipitously because of you?
Nope.
And how did this incident come about after you crossed the street? You were going from Benicio's to Taco Bell's?
Yeah.
And what happened?
I just walked across, and I guess a cop car was right there, and as soon as I got across, they pulled up beside me.
And do you know the name of the officer?
No, I do not.
Sorry?
I might have the ticket somewhere, though.
Oh, okay. If you have it around, we can take a look at it. Because I know that it's an interesting thing. I happen to have I think I have the jaywalking code section with me. I'll take a look, see if I do. Jaywalking is actually not crossing a street, not at a stop sign or crosswalk. That's not really the definition of jaywalking. And I don't have the code section with me, unfortunately. But still, the actual code section in the traffic code is you have to be either blocking or obstructing a vehicle, or you have to be between two traffic-controlled intersections, which means virtually all of Pacific Avenue from Cathcart, actually I should say from Laurel all the way down to Mission Street, you can't jaywalk unless you're blocking a vehicle. So actually when you cross the street, Mark, you were crossing next to the... How far away were you from the actual crosswalk?
I'd say about like 20 feet.
So you were actually on this side of the crosswalk, so you weren't between two traffic-controlled intersections, so you were given a ticket, apparently in error by police officers who mistook you for a criminal.
I guess so.
Well, that can happen here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, definitely does.
So you're here with your sign. What does your sign say? It says, broke and hungry, spare change or food, or spare food or change. Thank you. How's it going today?
No luck so far.
And how long have you been out here?
About 2 hours now, I think.
Do you get the impression that people are hostile or apathetic or sympathetic but without money? What's your feeling?
Mostly hostile. Then there's some nice people. Those are the ones you wait for. A lot of people just tell you to get a job. A lot of people just tell you to get a job or try not to look at you. That's just, you know, the way it goes.
Interesting. And how long have you been in town now?
I got into town a couple weeks ago. I come here off and on.
And are you sleeping outside?
Yep, I definitely am.
Any hassles for tickets?
Actually, not since I've come back into town, because I've been sneaky.
Have you heard of much sleeping ban ticketing activity?
No. What is that?
In other words, have people been getting tickets that you know of for sleeping or camping outside?
Oh, yeah, all my friends get them. Everyone gets tickets for sleeping. Just depends on if the cops find you in the morning.
And when's the last ticket you heard of this happening? Last time you heard of this happening?
Probably a couple days ago, 3 or 4 days, I'm not sure exactly. And people get them a lot. So,
anything you want to report to listeners of Free Radio about what's happening here at Soquel and Pacific or elsewhere in town?
Not much that I know of, man. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just kind of the same deal as always. It's holidays, so extra police activity. That's just what you get, you know?
Is there extra crime activity on the streets as far as you can see, or just extra police activity?
Well, it depends what you call a crime. I'm, you know, still drinking outside. I guess that's a crime, but I don't bother people out here. We go somewhere private and do it, you know?
Are you a alcohol abuser?
I don't think I abuse it. I don't shake in the morning.
And here comes an ambulance coming through, or a paramedic, actually. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day.
See you at the drum circle, perhaps.
Yeah.
And here at Walnut and Pacific, in front of the corner store, which is got a sign in the window, Psychic Readings, Palm and Tarot Cards. The name of the store is Psychic Readings Weekend Special. With some bunnies here on the corner. What's your name, bunnies and the bunny man?
You're welcome to pet the bunnies. Yes, sir. They're really fun. And I think we should leave that one to have a bit of a break there.
And in fact, that bunny serves as a sort of a headpiece on top of your hat.
Thank you so much, my friend.
And
Merry Christmas to you, my friend. What's that rabbit doing?
Bunny man actually has a seat, which he's sitting on his display device. So it seems he is, of course.
What's that rabbit doing?
A performance within 10 feet of a building. Display device within 10 feet of a building, which is illegal, but let's hope he isn't hassled for it. Carry on.
Goodbye, good to see you, and Merry Christmas.
And happy hoo-ha. There are very few people on the shady side of Pacific Avenue, Beat It, Camouflage, Starbucks, as far as people seated goes, because the sidewalk is actually only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 squares wide, which kind of rounds out to 14 feet. And so it's difficult to find a legal place to sit.
Hi.
Or to play music with a display device. It's legal to play music anywhere, but if you have, let's say, an open guitar case, it's called a display device. It has to be 10 feet from a building, or whatever the cop decides is the rule of the day. Often you get different varieties.
Hey.
And so most of the people are on the sunny side of Pacific Avenue, which is actually 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 squares wide, let's say in front of Calipone's or Dale Williams, although these stores also have overhangs, which police sometimes interpret as being the edge of the store, which actually is not really my understanding of what the actual property line of the business is, but then again, who understands properly around here? I see the drinking fountain in front of Dale Williams as usual, out of order. Also, there are numerous seated areas, seating for the private businesses leased off the public sidewalk.
That's it. See you on Sunday.